Say a special hello and good morning to Representative Short. Always lovely to see you and your smile. So this is probably a little bit more friendly part of the state right now than the other one. So yes, Mick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. Mick Cope, Game Division Manager. I just wanted to take a second of your time to introduce Anise Audi. He's our new carnivore section manager. Joined us in December. This is, I didn't step up here when he gave us the bear presentation, but just wanted to take an opportunity to maybe introduce Anise a little bit. He comes to us from working in with the state agencies in Arizona and Utah. He's worked on a variety of issues, including being the big game manager in Utah and the small game and upland game manager in Arizona. He's an avid hunter. Grew up on the East Coast, moved out to the West to attend college in Utah. I'm excited to have him part of the team. It brings a very vast and a very different, varied background to the table, and so I appreciate his partnership as we can move forward. But just wanted to introduce real quickly Anise. So, thank you.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
Bears and to cougars. So I'll turn it over to you, Anise. Again, welcome.
All right. Thank you, Chairman, members of the commission. So what I'm presenting next is our cougar hunting season regulations for the next 2 years, basically. Cougar management plan objectives. I want to just kind of iterate. There are kind of two things we're trying to accomplish under this game management plan. One is basically to implement a harvest guideline that corresponds to a stable cougar population. But the other one is to basically figure out a way to also provide opportunity for hunting of this species. So I think oftentimes we try to, you know, deal with one without the other. And you know, obviously there's several ways you can approach this. But what we're trying to do here is provide both of those objectives and how to figure out a way to get them both accomplished. And that's sometimes a little more difficult than dealing with one separately. So I'm going to just hit some of the background a little bit on our current structure and how it's set up. Basically, the early season, September 1st to December 31st, there's no guidelines limiting the harvest during that period. And then the late season is when the guidelines actually kick in, from January 1st to April 30th. Any legal weapons can be used in both seasons. Each hunt area or PMU has a harvest guideline that corresponds to the 12-16% that we've been talking about, and that Rich covered very well in his presentation. And again, that's excluding kittens. So we are counting 18-month-olds on up, both in the harvest and in the population. And then starting January 1st is when we can actually close units that fall within the guideline maintain a harvest at a certain rate in those areas. And again, only recreational harvest counts towards those guidelines. And I want to, I guess, probably take this opportunity to say that we do realize that, you know, what I'm presenting here is basically just for recreational harvest. I understand that there are other issues like depredation and public safety issues, and those need to be addressed as well. But I don't think this using hunting as a method to deal with those is a very good approach, because it's a very broad brush approach, and really we should use hunting for recreational harvest and then deal with those issues with the tools that we have, and maybe develop additional tools that we need to deal with those. I understand that's a big issue, and it's not something I want to minimize. I just want to make sure that what I'm talking about in this presentation is recreational hunting and not dealing with those other issues. So why revisit the guideline? We did a three-year package last year, but here we are, second year into it. So basically, last year's recommendation was contested. We do recognize as a department that we need to incorporate some of the uncertainty in our density estimates. Rich did a really good job saying how cougars maintain themselves on the landscape. But even within the study areas, there were density differences that were, although minor, they do occur. And then we need to provide, we felt we need to provide an opportunity for the commission to discuss different options other than the one option we recommended last year. So as Rich mentioned, we've kind of carved the state out into 50 PMUs where we're going to manage cougars on that scale. And within those PMUs, we set harvest limits based on 12 to 16%. So and the way we approach that is we have a density estimate. We basically multiply it by the habitat available in those PMUs, and that habitat is kind of what you see underneath those PMU boundaries. And then basically once we get a population estimate, we apply that 12 to 16%, and that gives us our guideline. So that's just a very, very easy calculation, and that's what makes this a good approach. It is simple, and it does provide for good management. So I'm going to show you kind of over the last few years since we've started implementing this, which units have closed, just to kind of give you an idea how varied it is. And Rich kind of hit on that there are some new PMUs that are starting to close that have never been hunted before. So this was what 2012-2013 PMU closures look like. 14 units closed during that season. The following season, 13, they kind of shifted a little bit. And then in 14-15, only 8 units closed that year. And a lot of this is weather dependent, whether it was a good year to hunt cougars or not. And then this is the current year, and this is probably up to about 2 weeks ago. These are the units that have closed so far. So, I mean, it varies from year to year, but you did see there were a few units that closed almost every year. It's probably 3 or 4 of them that happens. So going back to kind of, what harvests has looked like through history and starting with 1979, we seem like to have, I have harvested around 150 for a while, and then it reached around 300 in right around the late 90s, early 2000s, and then there were some legislation that caused changes in the way we manage cougars, and roughly harvest estimates have been between 150 and 300s over time, and then the last couple of years, we've been right around between 150 and 200. And this is, again, just sport harvest. There are other harvests that occur for public safety and depredation, which are not in this graph. So, again, I want to reiterate, I know, we try to base our harvest on the best available science and some of the research. These are only a few papers. But the main take-home message I want to say is that we have done research here. We kind of know what densities are throughout the state, although they do vary from one area to the next. And we are attempting to base it on some really good information that has taken many years to gather. So, the vital things that we're taking home from this research is that we can safely harvest cougars at approximately 14%, plus or minus 2. And then that cougar density, although it varies across the state, is roughly between, I think Rich had 2 in his presentation, but, different modeling can give you a little bit different, but we're assuming it's around 2.2 cougars per 100 square kilometers. And now, again, that's not including kittens. So those are all the cats that are 18 months or older. So to kind of get at a ways to look at this, realizing there's uncertainty around that estimate of density, we took a new approach to kind of figure out how to get to that guideline that we need in the hunt recommendations. So what we did is we took all the PMUs, and on a PMU by PMU basis, we basically took all the studies in the state that varied a little bit between their densities and did 50,000 iterations of each using random, you know, generated of each of them. And basically we came up with a histogram for each of these PMUs. And this histogram actually doesn't respond to any specific PMU, but they all look similar to this. So basically it gives you what your likelihood of a density being at any place in the histogram. And I'm going to provide you with three different options of harvest, and this kind of shows where those options fall within the likelihood of being, you know, given the random chance and uncertainty, that's the likelihood. So option one, you know, lives right around the median, so right around where we expect everything to fall if densities were similar statewide. And then option two, which basically adds one cat to the guideline, you know, kind of lives a little bit further to the right, and then option three is further. So as you move further to the right of this graph, you know, the likelihood of that density being what it is on the landscape diminishes, and that's kind of what we're talking about. There is that likelihood that it's there, but it's less likely that it's there. So realizing that densities do vary on the landscape, and that's kind of what we're dealing with. There is uncertainty around everything we do. So from this basic approach, we wanted to incorporate how we're going to deal with providing opportunities. So we built, based on that information, a graphing the opportunity, which is that red line going up, and then the probability of reaching our population objective, which is the blue line going down. And basically, where those two meet is where you're optimizing both. You're getting the most out of each of them. And that is bound by, both of those functions are bound by our 12 to 16, and that's why they meet in the right place. I want to make that clear, because they both are based on our game management plan. So again, we kind of plotted where the three options we provided fall into that, and our preferred option, option one, falls right in the middle of that. So this is PMU 1004. It looks very similar for all of them. Obviously, we didn't want to belabor showing every graph, but it basically sets an objective of 5 to 6, or a guideline of 5 to 6 cougars in option one, and then if you add one, your likelihood of meeting both objectives diminishes. So one increases, one decreases. So, and then option three, obviously, to basically go back to that blue line, that represents the likelihood of meeting our 12 to 16 objective. So it's not, moving into any other percentages. So we're basing everything on the objectives in the game management guidelines. And similarly, the red line that denotes recreational opportunity is also bound by that 12 to 16 guideline. So the most opportunity we can provide while maintaining that 12 to 16% harvest guideline. I mean, there's a lot of complicated math that went into this. I'm not going to say it was a simple approach, but I think it's a good approach to kind of model how likely, you know, we are to meet objectives. So given the way we've approached things, and, you know, I think Rich did a really good job outlining why we manage the way we do and why our guidelines are the way they are in our game management plan. The recommendations going forward is basically there's no change. We're not recommending any changes in the season dates. I think those work really well. I do want to iterate that, you know, the reason we made it so folks don't have to don't have those guidelines in place that first part of the season is because we understand that hunters are out there hunting, deer and elk, and we don't want to put that burden on them to have to call in while those hunts are going on. They're out in the field. They may not be home for a few days. But after all of the main hunts are done, after January 1st, we feel that you know, at that point we can kind of start, and that's when the majority of snow is on the ground and cougars are really beginning to be hunted in a more specific manner. So anyway, so our season dates remain the same with from September to December 31st is basically no guidelines, and then on January 1st guidelines kick in. And then option one is basically sets guidelines based on that 12 to 16% harvest rate, based on a statewide density, kind of, as I said, taking all of those studies that we did and putting them along the landscape, and then with an approach that incorporates uncertainty. And that's basically our department recommendation. We did give two options, basically to add one cat to the guideline and two cats to the guideline, and then showed you kind of how that that would affect the likelihood of meeting our objectives. Given that you may value one objective over the other, you could make decisions in those options as well. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Randy.
Questions? Okay, seeing none, we do have public input on this number. And again, some of you may be new, but 3 minutes. You either hear the beeper. If not, I will give you a visual. Call you up two at a time. So Bobby and Rachel. Is Bobby here? Oh, she did. She left for the day. Oh, okay. Thank you. Then, Commissioner? Take her away, Rachel.
All right. Good morning, everybody. I would like to speak on behalf of myself and some hunters. I really enjoyed, actually, Mick and Rich's slideshows, and I found something really interesting. As I kind of shared yesterday when we talked about deer harvest and whatnot, as I'm actively involved with them, I've had the opportunity to go out with a biologist in the field, pick up these deer that have been collared. I'm not sure if you guys, I'm sure you are aware that the Muckleshoots have stepped in Kittitas and Yakima County, and they collared, I believe it was about 120 of our mule deer does. And that area covered from the Weenass, L.T. Murray, and then there was a couple other areas to it. Over the last 2 years, the average winter kill was one doe. Over the last 2 years, 80% of those does that were killed were by cougar. The report for 2014 came out, so I'm kind of surprised that they aren't willing to share some information without giving some bio's name. I've actually spoke with some from the Muckleshoots, and they have their cougar population, because they have management hounds very well controlled. Their blacktail numbers have gone up significantly. And I do know from speaking with them, again, without outing his name, they went to court with Yakima Nations, and they were told that they can come over to this area, to Kittitas and to Region 3 into Yakima, and are talking about the hound management, because everybody's feeling like the state won't step in. The cougars, they're stopping the quota, and These cougars are juveniles, let's be honest. I mean, and if they're saying that the juveniles are the problem, I've heard it straight from a couple of the biologists that they don't want the quota cut off, but somebody higher up is saying, no, it's time to close that unit. So I have a real hard time with that, especially given these numbers that I have, and hopefully the 2015 report will be out soon. And hopefully, as Muckleshoot wraps this up, I know they've spent hundreds of thousands, and I think it's wonderful that they've done that on behalf of the state and that they're coming over to the other side of the mountains to help us out. But hopefully they will share cougar numbers everywhere within the state. I think things need to be looked at a little closer. I realize that the guidelines have been set. I think people would like to see guides be able to apply for hound permits as well as some of the public, just a few for in the future to help the population a little bit, because what's hurting in Kittitas and Yakima County. So thank you.
Dr. Thorpe and Commissioner.
Thank you. Members of the commission, a couple little things here I'd like to say on this issue. If you go back and look at the presentation that was just made, there's at least half of my county that is closed at the beginning of every year. So I would suggest that, you know, I realize that it's pretty hard to count cougars everywhere, but when you have areas that are closed every single year, you have to wonder whether or not the density numbers that they are using need to be reevaluated in certain areas. So I would ask that you put a little emphasis on doing some science to figure out whether those were just saturated with hunters, we got more hunters opportunities over there, or whether or not there needs to be some further research on that. I realize it's a little different than the actual numbers on the harvest, but the human conflicts issue, I do want to give you a little briefing on that. I had the opportunity to sit down with Paula Swedeen from Conservation Northwest, Representative Dunshee and Mick Cope, and talk about hounds. We talked about hound hunting in general, and you know, there's not a lot of support for hound hunting, a pilot project like we had before, to bring back the whole program for hunting, but there is for a chase only on human conflicts. And I said, I will go back and check with my fellow commissioners and my sheriff and see if we can find a way to have better reporting. We're willing to use our 911 number and get that information out there. If we can have a better response, and we're not looking to kill every one of these cats from the sighting, but a chase-only season or chase-only response to these calls, there seems to be good support for that. I've talked to several members of HSUS. I've talked to several members of the WAG. I've talked to the department a little bit. There seems to be good support for that. And the reason I really wanted to bring it up here with your hunting regulations, because I think that needs to be part of it. The department is not hearing all of the different sightings that are going on. My folks are not calling the department. You can tell them until you're blue in the face to call the department. They're not going to do it. But they will call my sheriff's department. And if I can get that reporting done and work with the department to try and get some of this chase only so we're seeing less of these human incidents, that'd be great. But I really need to stop getting those phone calls or 2 to 3 days later that, oh, well, yeah, I got on my game camera that I had 5 cats laying on my front porch. And no, I'm not exaggerating by saying that. I have the pictures. So I would urge you to try and move that way along with these regulations. And again, any area that's closed every single year, we need to be looking at why. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner, for working on this. I think it was very distressing yesterday to hear your constituents saying we're not reporting. We need to know these things, and I really appreciate the work you're doing with the department to resolve this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And there again, Wes, thank you for coming. Because there again, you and I, north and south, but live in the same world.
Right.
Ours, I see, was closed 3 out of 4 years. 1 year it wasn't. We had an open winter. Nobody could get out and hunt cats. That's just what it come down to. Rich did a really good job of explaining. Yeah, he keeps talking statewide, and that's the way that this is being managed. But when you're living in these areas, and I would have liked to pose the question to him, what causes these higher densities? I mean, you would think we've got a lot of deer, a lot of elk where we live, so that's probably, and maybe steeper canyons, and that's what makes the different geographic areas so we have higher densities. But I still, I sympathize with you because I see it in my world too, that where, I'll belabor this one, used to be a big thing to see a mountain lion. Yeah, no big deal anymore when you hear somebody talking about seeing a lion. So it would be nice if we could work some of this to where in these areas that have reached quotas every year, year in and year out, we could maybe make a little of adjustment. And there again, I know I shouldn't go there, but these are also the areas that we have wolves. So it is an issue. And we're talking science here, but in the end, it still has to be socially acceptable.
So I would mention that if you look at the greater portion, which is the probably 49 degrees north area, was the one that was closed every single time that it was shown up there. This winter, lots of snow. Last winter, 49 degrees north, the ski resort up there was only open for a very short time. Opened late, open for a very short time, hardly any snow in the mountains at all. So it seems weird that no matter what the weather conditions are, based on what the report was, that we're still seeing harvest being, quotas being met by January 1st.
Mr. Worker.
Thank you for your attendance and comments. I'm appreciating how difficult this is. One thing I want to just make a statement about is that, you know, we can talk about not thinking about trying to address the social conflicts issue via hunting regs. Rather than that, we would start dealing with these social conflicts as a safety, public safety issue, and tackle it in that way. But I am cognizant of how difficult it is to be responsive with the few numbers of enforcement officers we have and how stretched thin they are. The costs of adding to those numbers, we don't have the budget for. And I just don't want to see the department make casual commitments that we know are going to be hard to follow through on. You know, and it worries me a lot if we say, yeah, we're going to set up a system in which there's going to be a real quick response to problem cats, and trust us, we'll get there right away and deal with it very effectively. If we really don't have the resources to do that, I hate to see the department make commitments, promises that, you know, we just don't have a realistic chance at fulfilling. That just increases the distrust. So I just want to express my worry about whether we're going to be able to successfully deal with it as a conflict public safety concern.
So I hope that we will have contracts between the department and individuals that have the want to go out and use their hounds, and not necessarily they want to use it just to get paid for the cat, but as the opportunities to train those cats, train those hounds. So that was some of the conversation we're having, trying to keep the cost low. So.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Bob? So, Dr. Thorpe?
Ladies and gentlemen of the Fish and Wildlife Commission and Director Unsworth and Deputy Director Storr, hi, I'm Sylvia Thorpe. I'm from Nugent's Corners, which is an out-of-the-way place where you have a tree farm. Y'all got the handout, and I'm not sure which areas the gentleman was just speaking about, but there is a map here for the cougar management units. And I wanted to call your attention to the yellow tags on what y'all got. The first yellow tag is basically summarizing what Mr. Beaujolais was saying, which is, and this is kind of a hard concept to grasp. Kind of like you read the English, but you got the words who didn't get it. So I'll say it again. You probably won't get it again, but here it is. If you have a heavy cougar harvest, it's counterintuitive. There's fewer females and there's fewer kittens. Okay. But then the males have larger home range because there's more place to go. You kind of fill in the empty spaces like what he was showing us. And the age of the males decreases. Okay, now what that means is, hey, there's got to be places where we can go eat, make a territory, start over again so you have more cougar sightings and more complaints and more this, that, and the other. And so even though it sounds counterintuitive, and there's also research which is cited in here, there's also research which shows the more depredation hunting you have, the more recreational sport hunting you have in order to deal with the human cougar complaints, the higher the cougar count goes up the next year. And you round and round. Once you do that in enough areas in your state, then you kind of wind up with, well, what happened to the cougars, which is what I want to call your attention to next. Look at the next yellow piece of paper. There's more stuff here. There's not enough time to talk about it. That's why it's all marked up. This next piece of paper, turned over on the side, and you got a whole mess of graphs. There's yellow ones, green ones, and orange ones. What this shows is I got concerned because I plotted out the eastern Washington cougar harvest and the western Washington cougar harvest, and there wasn't hardly any in western Washington. There's a bunch of it in eastern Washington because there are more cougars. But then I got concerned about areas 5, 7, and 8, and I thought, what in the world is going on there? So I got concerned about the male-female thing in view of what I just said about when you have heavy harvest, you have a less viable population because there's fewer females. Remember, the females are the breeding stock, which is what all of us ladies are. Do you understand what I'm saying? The more you neuter the ladies, the less kids you have, and the less your population goes down. That's population. Well, you understand what I'm saying. The ladies are needed because you need a future, because you need kids. And the more you kill, the less future you got. Look at this graph here. You'll see this graph goes from 1997 over to 2015. You'll see that all of the there's high harvest. The female are taking more than the male in all the three areas. You'll also notice that there is a trend across 20 years to take more females, and then they bottom out and they don't go back up. My recommendation is that you simply go along with what the department has already stated, and I appreciate your time very much. One last thing, if you're not quite sure what's the difference between a male cougar and a female cougar, look at the picture with the last yellow tag. This is courtship. And the male is bigger, which is what Mr. Beaujolais was saying, but it's also got a bigger, wider head. And it looks like you wouldn't want to tangle with this guy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi, I remember the cookies that you brought us last
year. I didn't bring any this time. I figured, well, I'd be bribing you. But I'll bring them in the April meeting.
I saw you walk in the door immediately.
Cookies.
Cookies.
Well, if it's appropriate, I will bring some. But if it isn't appropriate, I thought, oh, maybe I did something wrong.
We're easy.
Now, Pavlov has something to say about that.
I think we need to check with the ethics folks.
That's one lawyer to another. So.
Thank you for your time.
Bob, you got the last word on this tonight.
All right. Hello, I'm Bob McCoy from Sammamish, Washington, and my comments are what Rich said, quite frankly. Taking just a little bit different approach, I made a handout. I may not have fully understood the two logistics curves, but I'm recommending that we that the commission choose option one, and Mountain Lion Foundation marked it up for us with some points. We feel that's the best place to be. But there was a book published in 1980 by a biologist, Kevin Hansen, and Kevin in it said that cat researchers were starting to notice that it seemed like in places where they hunted heavily, they had lots of problems with mountain lions. So this is not what we would call a new concept, but it's finally through the research of the people here in the state of Washington, it's been shown to be pretty much this is the way it is. Also agree that science is never settled, but we do have to go with the best science available. And if we looked at the histogram, it said that probably somewhere around 2-0, the 2-2 is the older cat, the sub-adults and up, and that would probably put us somewhere around 2,500 cats, I think. So I recommend option one. I think it's a good choice. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Bob. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, you know, of course, I'm no expert on the wildlife biology, but, you know, I have some research background, and one thing that is that I think we need to be careful of, and this applies in all disciplines, and that's the difference between a causation and a correlation. You know, not to weigh in one way or the other here, but of course, you know, when you see areas where you have a higher removal and you also then observe maybe higher conflicts, you know, we have to be very careful to make sure that we're, you know, that there is in fact a causation. It could be just simply a correlation. So before we, you know, dive into this and accept this, I think we need to really be cognizant of the difference between the two. And so I'll just leave it at that.
That's what happens when you mix a microbiologist background with a lawyer background.
Yeah, I think in my comments, I do point out that it is a correlation. I don't say causation. But if we looked at Rich Beausoleil's slides, the territory stacking and the territory expansion, the removal of a tomcat, who's a tough cat, does open the territory, and what they've shown, that there's a causation, that there's an open territory, those scrapes and scratches are not being renewed, and cats who are looking for a home range, who are typically going to be in the three-year-old region, they're converging in there, and they bounce off of each other like electrons around an atom, trying to avoid each other until one day one of them wakes up and says, today I'm going to be the Tom. And then we see the results that was shown in the photo. So it is correlated, but there is underlying hypotheses that look pretty strong about why. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. And that will take us